cadencia. Represento mis ancestros, toda la mezcla. No lo pierdas, bro. Latinoamericano de La Habana, te lo mando con sabor mejor. Aprenderás que en la rumba está la esencia. Que mi guaguanco es sabroso y tiene buena mezcla. A mi vieja y linda Habana, un sentimiento de manana. Todo eso representa
Cuba, orillas donde la onda.
Especulando en el micro, escucha como dice Michael Nico. La música cubana vale mucho, chico. Mi flow que estilo mira viene de La Habana.
Baba, vas-y, bouge ton cul sur le beat. Écoute ça, je prêche pour ma chapelle, Panam. Je représente.
You are listening to Rise Up Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. That track was Represent by the Orishas, a Cuban hip-hop crew, and we wanted to play that track to introduce this next segment on the free trade area of the Americas, because Cuba is the only country in the hemisphere excluded from the talks and the agreement. So Cuba, represent. I also just want to mention quickly that the track we opened up to was from Zion I, his new CD, Deepwater Slang, relatively new. Anyway, he's great.
No doubt. Much love to Cuba. As you have heard throughout the morning here on WBAI, the ministerial meeting for the proposed free trade area of the Americas began this Thursday. While conservatives and neoliberal economists have long claimed that an extension of such an agreement on trade would benefit all, the experience on countries in Latin and South America have long confirmed that this is far from true. What is called free trade is, in the corporate press, is often little more than a nice-sounding word for economic and military imperialism.
The talks in Miami ended earlier than expected yesterday, with participants signing what the Globe and Mail called FTAA Lite. The paper also reports that, quote, a major goal of the United States in Miami was to avoid the embarrassment of having trade talks collapse, as negotiations did in Cancun in September or in Seattle in 1999. Some also say that the talks ended a day early because of the ferocity of police conflict with the protesters, while others suggest that it was the inflexibility of the U.S. and Brazil who refused to alter their protectionist stances.
Right now...
Peace, this is Saki. Right now, we're joined by Rise Up Radio correspondent Stephen, who is reporting live from Miami, where he has been working on reporting on the actions against the FTAA and maintaining the live audio stream of reporting on those events. The audio, along with pictures, along with articles, can be accessed from www.ftaaimc.org, and that's the Indy Media Center's website for the FTAA proceedings. Stephen, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here, and I'm quite happy to be here, given just being on the ground and seeing the amazing amount of repressive apparatus that has been brought out here. It's really been quite startling, the way that Miami has basically turned into a almost a police state. It's been pretty shocking. At the same time, it's been really amazing to see the amount of people coming out to object to the FTAA, not just in terms of, you know, the usual suspects, in terms of community groups, Citizens Trade Commission, the AFL-CIO. Been a very powerful few days of action and resistance, and that's been really amazing.
Stephen, could you paint a picture for us of what the streets looked like in Miami yesterday? What did it sound like? Who was there? What was going on?
It's hard to paint exactly, but just the number of the constant presence of at least, you know, a number of police helicopters, of cops on every corner, of it really seemed like, you know, wherever you were, you were constantly being watched. The thing that was sort of odd, at least to me, is that at least when I was covering the downtown actions, there's one section of Miami, which is called Overton, which is traditionally sort of like more police repressed and a poor district. And whenever people would wander through Overton, the police wouldn't enter. Because there was an amazing amount of support from people from the area who were fully willing to, like, hide people, like let us sort of, like, duck through there. And I think that was really kind of a fitting image of that, you know, that there are people here that I was talking to you're talking for a few minutes, and they could see the connection between how Miami is being gentrified and being changed by, you know, by corporations moving to capital, and how the FTA would do this to the whole hemisphere.
And the connections between the local and the global picture is something we're going to be touching on in terms of New York City later on in the show.
Stephen, what's the age range of people who are there protesting and resisting these negotiations?
It's a very wide range. I mean, you have, you know, I guess you see, like, you know, the usual suspects or your college age activists, but at the same time, you also have a lot of trade unions, a lot of, you know, there's been articles in the paper about, like, you know, about people's grandmothers that are down here, you know, because of various reasons. And so while it's hard to categorize as a whole block, it definitely goes beyond the stereotypical, like, you know, like 20-year-old white guy image. So.
Okay, but and there are a lot of young people there, like yourself. Is that correct?
I mean, there certainly are. I don't have exact numbers because it's hard to tell. But yeah, there are a lot of young people. Who are out here and making a lot of connections between, you know, these different issues. And one of the things I just want to mention very quickly is one thing you never see mentioned in the coverage of these actions is it's always phrased, you know, like these violent protesters, such, but you never hear people discuss, like, how amazing it is to see, like, young people come out and just develop this, like, instantaneous cooperative, you know, structure of, you know, people, like, you know, providing food and medical support and, you know, and doing all this work that you know, in a way, I think, embodies the idea of how a free society could look on the spot.
Right. Can you... I was actually on the website that I mentioned earlier, and I'll mention it again. It's www.ftaaimc.org, and I read descriptions of the actual police brutality that's going on. Can you be a little bit more specific about the police response to the protesters? What did you witness?
I'm hesitant due to, I think, what might be impending cases in court.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, cops, you know, the usual rubber bullets, a lot of, you know, tasers, a lot of pepper spraying at very close range, ways you're not supposed to use it, particularly the use of pens, of very aggressive police. I saw people who got you know, shot, like, very very close to, like, their eye, and without getting into graphic detail, like, there have been a number of very ugly injuries.
The protests such as these are often characterized as being very violent, as being dominated by the so-called black bloc, and there's often debate about the use of violence and the presence of violence at such ministerials, but in general, has the tone of it been peaceful? The corporate media has in large part focused on the clashes with the police, but has that been the bulk of the gathering?
On the whole, I would say no, that hasn't been the emphasis, but I think it's important to emphasize that a lot of times when violence occurs, it's something which I would say is almost initiated by the police, and then people assert the right to defend themselves against this sort of oppression. And because when you're thinking about it, you know, like, you could say, you know, someone has a stick or a rock, but on the other side, you have, you know, thousands and thousands of cops with the whole apparatus of the state, which is itself a violent institution in the first place. And to overlook the violence which is being used, not just against the protesters, but against, you know, people in these communities daily, is to sort of, like, to make an issue out of something which, although it does exist and can be unfortunate, is, I think, comparatively minor.
And there's an article in the Florida Sun Sentinel today talking about the high bonds that have been posted for people, or bail imposed on people who've been arrested in association with the FTAA gatherings. There is a New Jersey teenager who got $10,000 bail for loitering, and another teenager from Miami who got $20,000 bail on a standard charge where the bail would be $500. So it's not only that the repression exists in the moment of conflict with the police, but according to the paper, is continuing through the judicial process. And I assume that through the IMC, people will be able to get information about the legal support that's going to be going on for the protesters who are going to be in jail, not just through today, but probably through the weekend and next week.
Yeah, go ahead, Stephen.
I haven't seen an article, but I just found out, like, 10 minutes ago that about five people who came down, they got arrested for the same charges, and their bail hearing is set for today. So I certainly hope they don't get bailed that high, because.
Do you have any numbers on how many have been arrested so far to protest?
The numbers that I've heard have been actually very low. The last time I heard was about 150, which seems to be rather low. Mm-hmm. I think police are taking the tactic of trying to keep down the number of actual arrests and
right.
using that as a pretext to claim that this situation is under control.
Mm-hmm. Right. And instead of doing things like arresting, I read accounts online of just pure police intimidation and threats and actually profiling of people, you know, who looks like a protester or who looks like an activist. And I actually also read that officers were dressed in plain clothes and within the marches, profiling protesters and making arrests and acting as if they were marchers, actually wearing, you know, anti-FTAA t-shirts and then intimidating people and arresting people that were basically doing their First Amendment right. And just to make a note of how it impacts us here and everyone, $8.5 million was earmarked by the United States Senate for security alone for the summit this week. That's $8.5 million that's not going towards education. That's $8.5 million that's not going towards affordable housing. And so these issues, even though they seem very large and abstract to us, really do have an impact on us.
And we're about to wrap up. Stephen, is there anything else that you want to add before we go?
Well, actually, going on what Saki said, that when you talk to people, you know, in the communities here, they have a very similar response. If you ask them, you know, like, well, what would you do with $85 million? And they'd say, well, you know, we could really use some schools, some hospitals, some actually, you know, infrastructure here. And I think that is a great summary of what the FTAA unfortunately is. It's a way of where money that could be used for actual community use of important things is going to be sucked up, you know, up through corporations that, quite frankly, already have more than their fair share of money.
Right. Well, Stephen, thank you for being with us on the phone as you're in Miami. We've been speaking with Stephen, who is a member of the Rise Up Radio Collective, and he's been down in Miami during the protest and the negotiations of the Free Trade Area of the Americas, the FTAA. Thanks, Stephen. Before we wrap up this talks about the FTA, and actually we're going to be continuing to talk about it because we're going to be talking later on about the economic implications of capitalism and corporations here in the United States and in New York City. We do want to also bring up the fact that Mary participated in the last protest.
That was in 2001, April.
Right. In 2001, there were FTAA negotiations going on in Canada and Quebec, mm-hmm. and Mary was there. And so even though we've gotten a picture of what's going on in Miami, how was it similar to what happened in Quebec at that point?
Well, the police repression was more dominant over in Canada. There were like 500 activists arrested. There was a lot of tear gas, too much tear gas. I can still, you know, remember how it felt. Oh, boy. It's a very emotional thing to go back into, because I was arrested and detained for 3 days. We weren't fed. The prisoners, and it was a lot of psychological torture within the prison. Quebec spent millions and millions of dollars. They erected a 10-foot high fence that surrounded the perimeter of the convergence area. It was very unnecessary.
And so and like in Miami right now, and I'm not sure if this is the case in Quebec, there were permitted marches mm-hmm. in protest of the negotiations were, you know, allowed ahead of time, and they were planned. And it's shocking to know that they will allow you to march, but then when you do march, completely take away the right for you to be on the street and with the intimidation. You participated in the march in Quebec?
Yes. Friday was a non-legal day. That was the 20th. And the 21st, the day which I got arrested, was the day we had the permit to march. And what they did in Quebec was have like three different zones called red zone, yellow zone, green zone. Green zone's like the go, the permit area where you can march. Yellow is the intermediate, where people are converging together and, you know, dancing and, you know, handing out flyers. And the red zone is right near the fence where all the action was going down. But there was no visible markers saying where you could march. And that's what happened, was that, like, that was an excuse for the police to go in and take anybody, because those markers were not visible. And also during the night of the 21st in April, there was, during, after the activities had ended, protesters were sleeping in the green zone area. They were beaten in their sleeping bags while they slept by police, dragged off to prison. There was blood on the sleeping bags in the sleeping areas. It was just a mess. And, you know, even though you have a permit, it's just so vague where you can be, you know, especially like when you're coming from another country, you really don't know the area. So, you know, they didn't like take that into account when they put like these little limitations for it.
And you and other defendants from that case are still facing prosecution, which is something that we will continue to cover and continue to keep everyone posted on. And it's important that we not forget that after the protests are over, not just around these international trade talks, but in general, once the spotlight goes away, there are people who are still left facing the repercussions. And it's important that a community station like WBAI make sure that it's there for people, both when the spotlight is on and when it's not.
And also, thanks, Kat, for mentioning that. Just got my memory going here, and just reminded me that the Quebec Legal Collective, which is representing like 400 defendants, need funds. So if you want to get in contact and help out, call the show afterwards and I can hook you up with some numbers. Thanks.
And I wanted to also make a point that, like Stephen mentioned, this perception of it being like young white men who are, you know, making noise. There also were protests yesterday in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and that was reported in the Reuters. And so the people of color throughout the world who this is impacting are also taking a stand to resist the free trade agreement.
And we are going to be back in just one moment talking about economic justice issues here at the local level. And you're listening to Rise Up Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM.